You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Tracy Ross. I'm joined in the studio by Kate Lochte, and we're joined on the phone by Murray State's Arthur J. Bauernfein, College of Business faculty member Sunayan Acharya. Welcome to Sounds Good.
Thank you.
Yes. Hello. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You know, you responded so generously to my question about the Bitcoin publicity that's been going on in the last week. And I was fascinated to read that those twins, those big investors, Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss, who faced off against Mark Zuckerberg, are part of the investors. But people have invested in Bitcoin not only from big investors and venture capital firms, but merchants and ordinary people, and it's imaginary money, yes?
Yes, that's exactly right.
How do you explain that?
Well, for the most part, if you think about it, the way we spend money nowadays, especially online when we buy things from Amazon or other websites, we don't actually spend cash. We link either our credit cards or our bank accounts. So in some sense, we have been using imaginary money. When you open a credit card account, you are spending imaginary money. So in that sense, it's more of an evolution from that concept.
So Bitcoin is more like a credit card?
Not quite. So therein lies the difference. So a Bitcoin is a currency for which there is no need to print out any physical paper money. It's based on the realization that as we continue forward, paper money becomes less and less important. So, for instance, when I go to New York once in a while, I don't have any cash in my pocket at all. And yet I'm able to travel there, eat there, live there, and without any trouble. So it's not quite like a credit card in the sense that, well, credit card, essentially you're spending borrowed money, but it's a good analogy. So, for instance, a debit card would be a better analogy, I guess.
Eventually, though, you have to pay money.
Yes. So, and think about it this way. So, when you spend money from your debit card from a checking account, so you're essentially linking the debit card is used as a link to your checking account, and the merchant is uses his own hardware to his own. He has his own. Machine, the debit card machine, where you swipe and the transaction goes through. But it's really linked to your actual money stored in your account. But you're not actually carrying it. But yet when you check into your bank account the next time, you'll find that, well, the amount of cash you had in there has been reduced compared to before, although you did not physically draw it out and spend it.
So how did this get started? Tell me about this Mt. Gox.
So Mt. Gox was initially, well, the origin of Mt. Gox is a bit funny. It was initially started in Tokyo as a platform for buying and selling trading cards. So there's this really popular trading card game called Magic the Gathering. It's been around since the early 1990s. It's also been played online for the past decade or so. And it's extremely popular. So the creator of Mt. Gox initially wanted to create a forum where people could buy and sell these trading cards for their games. And this was a few years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago. And then he saw that Bitcoin was slowly gaining popularity, and he decided to use, so he had already created the platform, so he decided to use it for trading Bitcoins instead. So that's how it got started. And then once it got more popular, he decided he didn't quite have the technical expertise to manage large transactions. So he sold it to what was, until about a couple of weeks ago, the owner of the exchange, Mark Karpos. So that's how it got started.
And what caused the tumult of the last couple of weeks that caused the value to fall so greatly?
So Mt. Gox released a little statement some time back, and they highlighted a few problems that they highlighted a couple of problems they've been having. Specifically, they said that some of their, well, what was happening was now these exchanges, the way they work is they have some amount of cash that's being circulated throughout the day because of transactions. But then a majority of their, well, I shouldn't say cash, I guess it's Bitcoin, virtual cash or Bitcoins. But the majority of the Bitcoins are stored offline. So they're stored not connected to the online exchange itself. Now, what was happening was, and this is what they realized and recently, that Bitcoins were slowly being siphoned away from their user accounts without their knowledge. And somehow, again, this is the part that boggles everyone's minds, and it's not clear yet. Somehow, they didn't. This has been going on for many, many years, and they didn't realize it. So they lost to the tune of 750,000 Bitcoins without even realizing it, and it was slowly being siphoned away. And they just found it out recently. And when the news came out, that's what cost, and because it represents a huge pool of Bitcoins out of the total in existence, and that's what caused the drop in value. In fact, it's really alarming because if that the stolen amount of Bitcoins represents about 7% of all Bitcoins in existence, so it's quite alarming.
And there is no regulatory recourse for investors in Bitcoin, I understand.
No, there isn't. I mean, there has the Federal Reserve Chairwoman, Janet Yellen, recently came out with recently released a statement saying, well, because their banks, our banks don't currently deal with Bitcoins, there's no reason for them to regulate it. So it does not fall under any regulation. This is still being figured out now. So because it's so far, it wasn't, until about a couple of years ago, it really wasn't important enough to be regulated. It's only recently that its usage has suddenly spiked with some big investors getting involved. So you mentioned the Winklevoss twins. And then very recently, some more retailers started accepting Bitcoin. So until recently, it just wasn't big enough to warrant regulation. So that's why.
So Mt. Gox is closed, and there's no way I could get Bitcoin now, right?
No, you can't. Oh, no, you absolutely can't. So Mt. Gox just happens to be one exchange that's based in Tokyo. There's other exchanges. There's a couple of U.S. I know there's one big U.S.-based exchange, and there's other places where you can definitely buy and sell Bitcoins. So it just so happened that Mt. Gox was a big had a big chunk of Bitcoins with them, and those Bitcoins mostly belonged to their users. Some of it belonged to them also. So they lost about 850,000 Bitcoins, 100,000 of which belonged to them. The remaining belonged to their users. Now, that is now the total number of Bitcoins in existence at present time is about 11 million. So there's still Bitcoins you can buy and sell at other places. It's just that this particular platform is gone. And the way Bitcoin works, now we don't quite know if these Bitcoins that have been lost can be gotten back or not. So there are a lot of users, there are a lot of volunteers who are actively trying to track what happened to these Bitcoins. They're looking through past transactions. They're looking to see, they're trying to look for any clues that will enable them to figure out where the Bitcoins went or who stole them. Because Bitcoins come with a private key. So to spend those Bitcoins, you have to issue a transaction order, and that order comes with a certain key. So if these are ever sold, if these Bitcoins are ever sold for cash, which whoever stole them, well, that's the only way they can profit for them. So if these are ever sold, then, well, they will be released with their keys. And that way, it may be possible at some point in the future to identify who it was that stole them. But for now, really no one knows where they went. But you can certainly buy Bitcoins at other places.
Well, you just mentioned something that puzzled me again.
Mm-hmm.
And that is getting cash from Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
If it's virtual currency, mm-hmm. How do I get the cash?
So what will happen is, so places like Mt. Gox, and there's a couple of other places like that, the reason they got so big is because they were offering a platform to buy and sell Bitcoin. So there are a couple of places where you can link your bank accounts or credit cards. and you can buy Bitcoins from them. So Coinbase is one example. That's a very popular website, and there's a popular exchange. And there's other places where what you do is you link your PayPal account or your bank account directly or your credit cards, and you spend dollars to buy Bitcoins. Or you can do the reverse.
You know, Sanayan, I am grateful to you for explaining this, but my mm-hmm. head is spinning.
Yes. So first of all, the reason why you would do this is because let's say you and I are on opposite sides of the world, and we want to send, let's say you want to send me some money. Now, money can take different forms. If I'm in Japan and you're in the U.S., and if you want to send me $50, you have to go through someone, right? You have to go through a bank. You have to go through Western Union or some kind of intermediary. So you would link your bank account to that intermediary. That intermediary would then process the transaction, and I would have to link my bank account to that intermediary also, like PayPal. And then I would get the $50 that you sent me. But this can take like 3-4 days. In fact, when I send money to my mom in India, it takes about 5 days for the money to be transferred from my bank account to her bank account. And it's a complex transaction that takes place because it's transferring money across two different countries. With Bitcoins, this becomes a lot easier. In fact, with Bitcoins, I can send Bitcoins to you regardless of where you are on the globe. And this takes literally minutes or less than a minute. It's about as fast as your internet signal is or as your phone connection is. All you have to do is place an order, and I place an order for a transaction that you want to send me 50 Bitcoins, and I get the Bitcoins almost instantly. So that is the main advantage of using Bitcoin, that there's no third party, there's no intermediary in place to get the order from you, then process the order, and then send it to me. So we are connected directly.
That helps.
Yes.
Enormously. Thank you so much mm-hmm. for taking time out of your snowy day to be with us today.
Gladly, very gladly.
Sanayan Acharya is professor in the Arthur J. Baron-Feind College of Business at Murray State University. And thank you so much for clearing this up for me.
Not at all.